welcome to the political cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host for tonight, James Edwards.
Welcome, everybody, to another live installment of the Political Cesspool radio program. I'm your host, James Edwards, coming to you from a hot and steamy, miserably humid Memphis, Tennessee afternoon. It is Saturday night, July 31st, last day of July. The long, hot summer continues, and it's even hotter in here at our flagship studios. Welcome again to the Political Cesspool radio program. James Edwards, Keith Alexander with you for this, our first hour of tonight's show. It's a pleasure to be with you here from, again, AM 1380 WLRM Radio in Memphis, Tennessee, the AM/FM affiliate stations of the Liberty News Radio Network, and, of course, our online simulcast at thepoliticalcesspool.org. Now, everyone will no doubt recognize the words of Benjamin Franklin in response to the question, "What kind of government have you given us?" He famously replied, "A republic, if you can keep it." Well, we couldn't keep it. Killed by the icons of the left, Lincoln, Wilson, FDR, our vaunted republic exists now only in name, which a majority of Americans can probably no longer even spell, if they even know the word. Tonight, we're going to be discussing the latest heavy-handed blow to the myth of self-government, the ruling against the Arizona immigration law by a federal judge. Winston Smith has commented on this decision at our website, thepoliticalcesspool.org. I have done so as well. We will be discussing this topic in depth tonight during our second hour. So the second hour will exclusively feature our opinion and analysis on this very destructive decision. But Keith Alexander, it's a play they've been running since the Civil Rights era. They knew that they could circumvent the will of the American Republic by basically legislating from the bench, something they were never supposed to have done in the first place. But certainly rules and laws are not going to stop the support group of the regime, the oligarchy as it is.
Remember in the 30s they used to have a kind of cliche line, who killed Cock Robin? Well, let's say that Cock Robin is the American Republic. Who killed it? The answer is liberalism. And what the events that are accelerating under the Obama administration but have actually been in play since even before 1954 but had their first great traction in 1954 with the Brown decision is that we've lost our republic. There is not self-government is like a dream. It's, you know, you left out of your panoply of villains John F. Kennedy, Lyndon Baines Johnson, you know, the two Bushes, Jimmy Carter. All of these people have incrementally helped end the American Republic and the limited government that was bequeathed to us by our fathers. What all this shows, in my opinion, James, is that the Southern segregationists, the so-called Southern Caucus that wrote the Southern Manifesto in response to the Brown decision, were absolutely right. We need to turn back to their wisdom. They said that we basically lost any connection to the rule of law in America with the Brown decision. That's when a bunch of so-called expert geniuses on the U.S. Supreme Court decided to dispense with all of the standard operating procedures of the judicial system. They didn't follow the program, the principle of stare decisis and following the precedents of the court before them, and basically made up a decision based on some type of sociological flapdoodle. Well, they're still doing it. The fact is, under the Obama administration, what we're seeing is an unprecedented acceleration of this leftist move, and quite frankly, I think it's good that we have this. You know, we've all heard the old analogy about the frog in the pot and how the frog, if he is thrown in a boiling pot of water, will jump out, but if he's put in room temperature water with the temperature slowly rising, he'll allow himself to be boiled to death. Well, under the Obama administration, under, you know, an obvious disregard for the rule of law that's represented by not prosecuting the new Black Panther Party for an obvious videotape documented violation of the Voting Rights Act of 1965, and then not only refusing to enforce our federal laws about immigration and about border control, and then going to court to block a state from enforcing those laws when it's there's all sorts of overlap between state law and federal law. Let's don't be under any misapprehension about that. We have state civil rights laws that mirror federal civil rights laws. Nobody's complained about that on the left. We also have state securities regulation, which mirrors federal securities regulation. So, you know, basically what they're saying is that the rule of law is out the window, and we're seeing now a lot of frogs jumping out of the pot, James. That's what the Tea Party movement is. That's a bunch of people that said they'd never go that far, and the light bulb is coming on over their head, and they're saying, by golly, they will go that far and more. In fact, if we don't act soon, we're going to be chained to a wall in a dungeon somewhere.
Let's just hope that all of those frogs in the Tea Party will start screwing in 100-watt bulbs instead of the 20 watts that they got going right now, and then hopefully they'll become race conscious and realize their full potential. But that's, of course, another topic, a topic we've been covering time and time again.
Well, like we've said before, you have to crawl before you walk and walk before you run, and I suggest that we have patience and forbearance with our less enlightened compadres.
They do have good fundamental instincts, and they're on the right track. They just need to know how to be most effective, and of course, we think we've got the prescription here. A couple of other quick programming notes. Winston Smith and I will be covering the ruling from Susan Bolton, Judge Bolton, against SB 1070 out of Arizona during tonight's second hour. But first, I want to let everyone know that the comment feature on our blog, the Political Cesspool's website, the radio program itself has never been hotter than it's been this summer, getting up to 10,000 unique visitors a day to the website. Just the momentum of this show is absolutely staggering right now. And we've been upgrading our website as a result of all the new visitors and traffic. And the blog comment feature is now back in working order. That had been out of service for a couple of weeks when I let everybody know here at the top of the program that if you go to our website, thepoliticalcesspool.org, you read through our blog entries, you want to comment on those blogs, as a lot of people do, that feature, that function is now back and working. What else is going on this week? The book, Racism Schmacism, my book came out June 5th, of course, still getting great reviews. This week alone, Peter Brimelow, the very famous Peter Brimelow, former editor of Forbes magazine, former editor of the National Review. He is the founding editor of VDare.com and author of the iconic book Alien Nation. He wrote a great endorsement of the book this week, as did Alex Kurtigick for the Alternative Right website. And the title of his review is The Book of James, which was a clever play on words, I thought. So for those reviews, go to our website. The Southern Poverty Law Center, finally, Keith, you know I was getting a little worried there. I was expecting them to be one of the first to comment on my book. It took them a month, but they finally came through for me, as they always do. We don't have a lot of time left in this segment, and I'm certainly not going to read the whole the bile in its entirety from the SPLC, but if you can break it down in 30 seconds or less, it is on the website for people who want to read it. What was their synopsis?
Well, they said that this was an amateurish effort by a megalomaniac. That's a more or less a synopsis of what they're saying, and that he's apparently it's a rite of passage now for a far-right radio pundit to write his book, and then they just go about panning it. You know, it's surprising that a multi-million-dollar enterprise like the SPLC, one, takes this long to react, two, that their reaction is so amateurish. If somebody there needs to be doing some fact-checking, because they got all sorts of facts wrong. I'll let James break that down for you. But, you know, it's obvious that they had some intern or somebody that doesn't know, you know, which end is up, or, you know, fecal matter from Shinola, as we say here in the South, to write this thing, somebody that is a rank amateur, and there's just, you know, not much of anything of substance there, but Of course, they depend. We're one of their hobby horses. If it were not for us, they wouldn't have anything to rail about hardly, and they wouldn't have any way to gull their primarily Jewish audience out of their money.
Well, we have become, as people have said, even the SBLC says, we have solidified ourselves as the premier spokesman of the pro-white viewpoint. And if all of these positive reviews we've gotten this summer doesn't make you want to buy my book, hopefully the bashing that we received from the Southern Poverty Law Center will. I loved it. I was proud of it. I want you to read it. Do so at thepoliticalcesspool.org. We'll be back right after this.
Jump in the political cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. I'm telling you, honestly, ladies and gentlemen, there's just so much media attention surrounding our work right now. A lot of it positive, some of it negative, of course, from our detractors, and we welcome that as well. There's just so much going on. It's hard to keep you up to date with the 3 hours we have allotted to our weekly broadcast that it's just, you know, you got to go to our website to stay up to date on all of the news that is news about the Political Cesspool Radio program. We gave you a little bit of an idea of what's been going on this week there during the first segment. And we'll, of course, talk more about it as we move forward. But I do want to remind you that Winston Smith will be on deck with me for the second hour as we spend the entire hour exclusively focusing on the Arizona immigration debate, the ruling from Judge Susan Bolton, and what it means for our people and the sovereignty of the great state of Arizona. And during the third hour, I have our illustrious producer working on a surprise for you. We're going to try to do something a little different during tonight's third hour. A little treat here last Saturday of July. The summer's beginning to start winding down, so we're going to do a little something fun and out of the ordinary during tonight's third hour, we hope. So a lot of fun still yet to be had during tonight's broadcast of TPC. But first, much business still at hand, and I'm going to turn it over to Keith Alexander to share with you his thoughts on something that he picked up for your listening edification. Keith?
Well, we were talking about the SBLC just a moment ago, and as we were commenting, basically, if the political cesspool didn't exist, the SPLC and the ADL would have to invent us and probably staff some poseurs in to be us. Because I think we've done more for their fundraising efforts than just about any other organization that you could imagine, particularly when you consider our funding compared to theirs, it's remarkable. But, you know, the SPLC and the ADL, the fact that groups as deficient in intellectual prominence or capability are leading the charge for the left shows you just how completely the left has dominated things when no talents people like that, like the, as recognized by the, or as exemplified by that book review that they did. In fact, we pointed out their shortcomings and they immediately tried to correct them. In other words, acknowledging that we were absolutely correct. What is really important is that under the Obama administration, people are finally beginning to get it. It's a shame that people like the Tea Partiers have ingested so much poison, so much Jim Jones Kool-Aid of liberalism, that it's interspersed throughout their reactions. But their reactions are at least, you know, a hopeful sign for us. I've been watching movies this week, and James and I have, and one of the movies that we've watched is The Yearling, and at the very beginning of that show, they have this at the very beginning. They say, "We dedicate this picture to those who came to our land long ago and made it their home and our inheritance. For us, they faced the unknown. For us, they hungered and toiled. Their endurance is our prosperity. Their struggle is our freedom. Their dream is our certainty. Their dawn is our day. From their dust we spring, and reaping the great harvest of their lives and works, we remember them with blessings. This was a prelude to an old movie, The Yearling, made in 1946, the year after World War II ended. The post-war period from 1946 to 1954 was the zenith of America in terms of power, prestige, and prosperity. Little did our ancestors know what the subsequent 50-plus years of the 20th century held for us. I'm haunted by the passage in The Yearling prelude that says, "Their dream is our certainty." The strong, prosperous, and self-confident nation they bequeathed to us, their descendants, is no longer a certainty. On the contrary, it seems almost certainly destined to crumble and fall. We're living in the twilight of the gods. The end could come at any time. In 1950, America was the richest nation in the world, with the world's largest per capita income. In 1950, America manufactured 96% of all the goods we consumed. Now we can't even cap a leaking oil well without foreign help. We have a military now that can't or is not allowed to win wars, and we spend our wealth keeping the peace for the benefit of ingrate nations that wouldn't give us the sweat off their backs. We are feckless, confused, and helpless. Americans, considered at the time that they were sent over here to be the dregs of Europe, carved out of a hostile wilderness the greatest nation on earth. Our ancestors created it from nothing, and we can't even seem to maintain it. How did we fall so fast? Essentially, in a scant 50 years. This wasn't the result of a normal evolutionary change, but the result of a planned destruction so evil in its conception and execution that it beggars belief. Most Americans are clueless because they couldn't imagine people and plans this diabolical. But what is the plan? What is the cause of our decline? In a word, liberalism. Who promotes liberalism and our impending destruction? Jewish power and influence, which guides and directs a clueless army of minorities and useful idiot white Gentiles. Lincoln, a traitor in his day who seems almost like a patriot compared to today's leaders, said, "America is so abundantly blessed with natural resources and so naturally protected by two large moats called the Atlantic and Pacific Oceans that I conclude that America must either endure forever or die by suicide." Our internal enemies are accomplishing what no external enemy could achieve, the downfall of America. Like Rome, we seem destined to fall not from barbarians from without, but to barbarians from within. Only a miracle can save us now. The victory is assured if the masses of our founding stock and kinsmen chose to act. The miracle will be for a light bulb to come on over the heads of a population beguiled, bewitched, and bewildered by liberalism and political correctness. All that is needed is for the light bulb to turn on over enough heads. Making this happen will be a miracle. Changing the hearts and minds of our countrymen will be the greatest, most daunting miracle of them all.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that right there is why the political cesspool is so wildly popular or so wildly hated, depending on your perspective. We give you commentary like that, commentary the likes of which you will not find on any other mainstream AM radio program, and we give it to you without retreat, surrender, or apology. That is Keith Alexander at his finest, bringing you the kind of news and ideas that you ought to be pondering. And we're going to continue to do that. I've been doing it for a long time. I'm going to continue to do it, hopefully, for many, many more years to come. Keith, we were talking, of course, about what's forthcoming later on in the show during the second and third hours. We have just a couple of seconds before break. Why don't you let people know what's coming up the next couple of segments?
Well, we're going to talk again about the Tea Party versus NAACP flap, because I think that's indicative of a fault line of much greater significance than that minor flap in American society today. And it is a fault line that was engineered purposefully and specifically by the left, by liberalism. Liberalism is the tactic and the strategy by which America is going to be brought down. Now, there are a lot of people that in conservative quarters nowadays that try to say that conservatism and liberalism is a passé, but nothing shows that it's even more important than ever than that particular flap. And also the SB 1070 flap, we're going to deal with that in the next section.
Stay tuned, everybody. It's coming at you right after this here on the Political Cesspool.
If you knew Peggy Sue, then
don't go away. The Political Cesspool guys will be back right after these messages.
Peggy Sue.
Get on the show and express your opinion in the political cesspool. Call us toll free at 1-866-986-6397.
All right, my friends, here we are again, continuing on tonight's broadcast of the Political Cesspool radio program. This, the 31st day of July, 2010. James Edwards here with you, and my good friend and co-host Keith Alexander setting directly to the right of me as we charge forward tonight. And Keith, we had a little get-together for either a late lunch or an early dinner, depending on your perspective, a couple hours before tonight's broadcast. We assembled to talk about the issues we would address tonight on the broadcast, as we always do each week. And Keith brought to my attention, and he's about to bring it to yours, a story that, for whatever reason, as I said, it's been a pretty busy summer, and the last couple of weeks have been busier than most. But Keith brought to my attention something that had slipped past my normally pretty astute radar. Keith, why don't you share with the fans this story that really is just so blatantly anti-white in nature that, well, I think the reaction will be pretty self-evident, Keith.
Well, it probably slipped by your attention, James, because this was an article in the American Thinker, which it's not quite a neocon website because they occasionally stray off of the neocon reservation as they did on this particular article. But for the most part, they're pretty mainstream and they don't rock the boat. They don't get into to issues like Jewish power and influence or race, which we fearlessly do. But there was an article on July the 22nd in the American Thinker written by one William Tate entitled "Race Played Role in Obama Car Dealer Closures." It says the Obama administration, already under fire for unprecedented allegations of racial bias, faces a new bias claim from a most unlikely source, one of the administration's own inspector generals. Decisions on which car dealerships to close as part of the auto industry bailout, closures that the Obama administration forced on General Motors and Chrysler, were based on race and gender, according to a report by Troubled Asset Relief Program Special Inspector General Neil M. Borofsky. Dealerships were retained because they were recently appointed, were key wholesale part dealers, or were minority or women-owned dealerships, emphasis added. Now, let's break this down and let's put it in terms that we all can understand. Basically, the people whose dealerships were closed out, even though they were profitable and even though the management of Chrysler and GM didn't want them closed out, these new cars ours of the Obama administration closed out car dealerships primarily owned by white males, located in red state America, in other words, parts of America that didn't support the Democrats and Obama, didn't vote for Obama, and dealerships in rural areas. They didn't touch one minority-owned or woman-owned dealership. They were sacrosanct. Basically, if you really put yourself on their radar and in their crosshairs, if you supported Republican candidates or made comments against the Obama administration. This is how blatantly partisan the Obama administration is. This is how far from the rule of law and impartiality they are. And this is why we said in the earlier segment, the pot's boiling awfully fast. The pace of liberal change is going at such a pace that people are now having the scales fall from their eyes, James. They see what the liberal program is and always has been, as the senators in the Southern Caucus told us back in the early 50s and mid-50s. So this is what's happening to America. We are basically, it's like John C. Calhoun said back in the 1830s. He said the true goal of the abolitionists is not to emancipate or free the black race, but rather the black race and the white race change places in society. They made targets of all of the white-owned dealerships, and they made sure that the least profitable dealerships, which tended to be the minority-owned dealerships, were left alone. And, of course, if that doesn't help them prosper with all their competition taken away, then they really, you know, they can't make it anywhere. I mean, they couldn't shoot a fish in a barrel. But they were given a fish in a barrel to shoot by the Obama administration. So anybody that is under any illusions about a post-racial America under Obama needs to wake up and smell the coffee. It's anything but post-racial. It's the most racial presidency in the history of the nation.
Keith, examples such as this are so gratuitous and so obscene that it just, there's no way you can deny, let me put it this way, there is no way that you can deny that there is a very real
racial animus,
anti-white resentment in play here from the very highest ranks of the federal government. And had this sort of economic terrorism existed in the inverse order, well, the seventh level of hell would have been unleashed here upon the American countryside. Had a white president closed down a number of minority-owned car dealerships, and only minority-owned car dealerships, well, everyone knows what a big story that would be. So, yeah, I think you're right. This is another just a perfect example of what we're dealing with, proving our point right here on the political cesspool. I do believe it is examples such as this that will accelerate the frog in the frying pan analogy we're using tonight. But the question is this: what are we going to do about it? What are we going to do about it? I think that a lot of people are waking up. The Tea Party people, although they're not realizing their potential, and I'm very worried that they're going to just bumble and blow their entire window of opportunity, they still fundamentally are with us on these issues. Their instincts are right. They're just not going about the most effective way of playing their cards. Now, but it still goes to show, with that many millions of European Americans in company with one another, that there is something afoot. We know by the tens of thousands of people we reach here on the political cesspool alone each week that there is a growing clamor for organizations and individuals to exist that speak out exclusively for the self-interest of European-American ideals. But again, what are we going to do about it? And Keith, that is something that our people have not answered yet. Marching around a bathtub and throwing tea bags in it isn't going to get the job done. We have to be more vocal. We have to be unequivocally pro-white in our approach and unapologetic in that approach. And I'm not saying that the work that we do here on the political cesspool eclipses that of other people out there. I'm sure that there are people out there that do more and are more effective than we are. We're more effective than most, and I think that people could take a page from our playbook and use it and better the kind of results that they're getting by trying to work through the Republican Party and doing all of these things that they've been doing for decades that have not delivered us one victory, Keith.
Well, if anybody is still under the illusion that there is a white Anglo-Saxon Protestant hegemony that is ruling America, this should put the stake in Dracula's heart on that. There is absolutely the most powerless people in America are apparently white Anglo-Saxon, white Gentile people in America. Even that guy that you saw before that in your life that is the owner of a prosperous car dealership can have his entire wealth just pulled out from under him like the snap of a finger by this new ruling elite that we have. And it's time for people to wake up and smell the coffee, as we said before. Now that people have been disabused of the notion that white people are really in control, believe me, they're not. It's time for us to start establishing a sense of racial solidarity and lobbying for our interests. If we're not, we're going to be rolled over. I mean, we're going to be plowed under. Just look at what happened, for example, to the car dealers. You know, these people were pillars of their communities, and they're being plowed under. Now, this is what the new left has in mind for us. This is what the cultural Marxist left planned on. And if they're successful, they're going to destroy America. America is going to spiral into third world status. Now, this, unfortunately, is, you know, just, you know, that these are like canaries in the coal mine, and it's time for people to start paying attention. And the next step after you pay attention is to realize that you've got to expunge any residual liberalism from your outlook. This is where the Tea Parties fail so obviously. These people that are busily trying to deny that they have a racist bone in their body and that they have nothing but love in their hearts for black people don't realize that none of that makes a hill of beans difference to the people on the left. The people on the left that are running the left, and, for example, like the NAACP.
Got to take a break. We'll be right back.
We got to get out of this place. There's a better
Welcome back. To get on the political cesspool, call us on James's Dime, toll-free, at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
All right, everybody. Keith Alexander was riding hard to the sound of the guns right there before that last commercial break, and we had to knock him off his horse. Had to pull in the reins on him a little abruptly, but anytime a man's, you know, got the saber in one hand, the rifle in the other, he's not even hanging on to his steed. He's just galloping, you know, with reckless abandon. I hate to cut him off, but
I'm glad you did, because quite frankly, I was beginning to channel Eddie Miller when I was
the Bombardier. But anyway, Keith, we did have to take that short commercial break. This is broadcast radio after all, but certainly want to turn it right back over to you and allow you to continue your impassioned soliloquy.
Okay, here it is. Look, I'm revving up my motor mouth again. Here's what the people in the Tea Party don't seem to understand. Their feelings of love or hate have nothing to do with being labeled a racist. This is what James tried to bring out in his book. You can have nothing but kind and benevolent thoughts directed at other races, and if you adopt principles and promote principles, as the Tea Party does, such as limited government or lowering taxes, you are the enemy, and the enemy is to be designated racist. Why? They realize in this politically correct regime that they have created through psychological conditioning, through the schools, through the churches, through academia, that they get a Pavlovian response from white people, particularly white Gentiles, when they charge them with racism. Just like Sheriff Paul Babu in Pinal County, Arizona, morphed from being this brave, gun-toting, tough-talking, tough-acting Western sheriff into a guy that reflexively falls down, gets in the fetal position, sucks his thumb, and begs for forgiveness for being a so-called racist and denounces the people that he had befriended. When somebody points out to him that in the opinion of, you know, these Solons from the ADL and the SPLC that they're racist, this has got to stop if we're going to have any traction in this movement. If you don't want to save America, if you would rather be politically correct as you see not only America but your livelihood and your family and your prospects go down the drain, well then, go right ahead and try to play this politically correct game. Otherwise, purge all the liberalism out of your system. This is why we're paleoconservatives as opposed to mainstream conservatives or neoconservatives. We're not ashamed of our conservative forebears. We know that they were right and that history has proven them right. For example, there was an article in the Memphis newspaper today about how under the new improved standards for testing, almost half of the public school students in Tennessee no longer are up to snuff. This is part of the LESS program. And how did the public schools get to be so inferior? They got to be that inferior through Brown versus Board of Education. There's been a constant decline, which accelerated with busing, as a result of the application of liberal snake oil to the public schools. And we have gone from having a public school system in America that was number one in the developed world to one that is near the bottom of the developed world. And, of course, all of this fits perfectly in with the liberal plan. They think that the public schools are great successes. The people that are in those schools may not be able to read or write. They may not be able to do calculus or even algebra, but you give them a politically loaded question and they can always be depended upon to give the politically correct answer. This is, and these type of people, of course, that don't have skills, are basically unemployable, are exactly what the left wants. These are the people that will turn to the government for their livelihood. You see that they've just extended unemployment benefits again, and they'll continue to do this because they want a generation and a population of unemployable slubs who will always vote for big government and higher taxes on the ever-shrinking group of people who are productive in America. We're going to basically do away with the middle class if the left has its way. Now, you know, this is where the Tea Party needs to have that light come on over their heads. When they realize that they're never going to catch any type of bouquets from the left for being politically correct, all they're going to do is emasculate and define conservatism so that conservatism can never compete successfully with liberalism. This is the way to go about it. Keep on trying to promote blacks within the Tea Party movement. Keep protesting that you're not racist. Keep trying to please the NAACP, the ADL, and the SPLC, and you'll find out that you have cooked up the recipe for complete and ultimate failure. Now, that's what's going to happen unless people in the right and take a paleoconservative viewpoint and realize that Frederick Hayek, who was a noted conservative writer and thinker back in the mid-20th century, wrote a book called The Road to Serfdom. Liberalism, in his mind, was the road to serfdom. Conservatism was the road to freedom. Keep that in mind. Liberalism, in all of its manifestations, is the enemy. Liberalism is the modern face of evil. There's no part of liberalism that is good. This is what Glenn Beck, this is what Bill O'Reilly, this is what Sean Hannity, this is what Rush Limbaugh all need to learn. This is what Laura Ingraham needs to learn. You cannot bring a snake into your house without being in danger of being bitten. Now, liberalism is that snake. So wake up and smell the coffee. So that's, you know, so far the Tea Party versus the NAACP is indicative of a much greater fault line, and this is as good a place as any to draw a line in the sand and say, we're no longer going to worship the Baal of political correctness. We're going to fight you at every place. You are the enemy. You're not the loyal opposition anymore. You are the enemy. You're trying to destroy America. It's becoming more and more clear with every passing day. Now, one of the ways that it's become clear is there are two ways that show just recently how right the Southern Caucus was, how right the writers of the Southern Manifesto were when they said that liberals basically have no respect or regard for the rule of law. One is the Black Panther Party intimidation incident during the 2008 presidential election in Philadelphia. This was a clear violation of the Voting Rights Act of 1965. There has never been a clearer one. It was captured on videotape. The Justice Department was proceeding with the prosecution until Eric Holder and the Obama administration pulled the plug on it. Why? Because they're not principled. They're partisan. They never want these laws applied against blacks or minorities or against liberals. The second thing is this SB 1070 episode in Arizona. Not only will the federal government refuse to enforce immigration laws against non-whites, and that's what most of the illegal immigrants are, you know, wake up and smell the coffee, Tea Party. You know, it's not people from Ireland that are sneaking into America. It is people from Mexico in the third world. Well, you know, not only will they not enforce their own laws, they go to court to get an injunction to block the states from trying to enforce those laws. Now, Robert Sarver is a perfect example of what the left is doing. Robert Sarver of the Phoenix Suns, liberal Jewish owner of the Federal Sun, Phoenix Suns. Remember earlier he had his team come out with low suns on their uniforms to show that they had solidarity with the Chicano and Hispanic community and was against Governor Brewer. Well, he again expressed his opposition to SB 1070, to which Governor Brewer, Jan Brewer of Arizona, made this reply. She said, to the owner of the Phoenix Suns basketball team, Robert Sarver, who opposes Arizona's new immigration laws, Governor Jan Brewer released the following statement in response to Sarver's criticism of the new law. What if the owners of the Suns discovered that hordes of people were sneaking into games without paying? What if they had a good idea who the gatecrashers are, but the ushers and security personnel were not allowed to ask these people to produce their ticket stubs? Thus, non-paying attendees couldn't be ejected. Furthermore, what if the Suns ownership was expected to provide those who sneaked in with complimentary eats and drinks? And what if, on those days when a gatecrasher became ill or injured, the Suns had to provide free medical care and shelter? Now, if that's not hitting the nail on the head, James, I don't know who has.
That's hitting the nail on the head and driving it straight, as you say, Keith, and that is the most perfect analogy that we could draw between, you know, how that could be inflicted upon
the
Sarver.
The hypocrisy of the left.
The hypocrisy of the left and what he would have to face compared to what he is wanting.
Exactly,
what he's wanting to inflict upon the state of Arizona. We got to take a break. Much more about immigration coming up with the Cesspool Return for its second hour.
Harv leaped to his feet and says, something's got a hold on me. Yow! The day the squirrel went berserk in the First Self-Righteous Church in that sleepy little town of Pascagoula. It was a fight for survival that broke out in revival. They were jumping pews and shouting, hallelujah! Well, Harv hit the aisles dancing and screaming. Some thought he had religion, others thought he had a demon. And Harv thought he had a weed eater loose in his fruit of the looms. He fell to his knees to plead and beg, and the squirrel ran out of his britches leg unobserved to the other side of the room. All the way down to the amen.